All right, let's dive into this. We've got some interesting material to unpack today, talking about this moment of performance materials bankruptcy case. You know, this isn't your typical business news headline. It really gets to the heart of how bankruptcy law can impact the rights of creditors.
Yeah, it really does.
We're talking about make-whole premiums, disputes over interest rates, and just this whole web of debt priorities. Think of this as like a crash course on a case that really sent shockwaves through the bankruptcy courts, especially if you're dealing with, you know, the intricacies of corporate finance and restructuring.
Right.
We're going to break down the big clashes, the key arguments, and really figure out what it all means for anyone who's got skin in the game when it comes to these complex debt structures.
Definitely. This case was decided by the Second Circuit, and it's a super clear example of how the bankruptcy code can bump up against the very precise language that's found in these debt agreements.
Right.
And it really shows how important those tiny details are, especially if you're a creditor trying to, you know, get your investment back in a Chapter 11 situation.
Absolutely. So to really get into this, let's set the stage here. What exactly was Momentive, and what kind of financial mess landed them in Chapter 11 to begin with?
Well, Momentive was a big deal, like a global player in the silicone and those specialty materials industries. But, you know, just like a lot of companies out there, they had racked up a mountain of debt. We're talking about something like $1.6 billion.
Wow.
And this debt was all structured in different layers, you know, based on seniority. They had $1.35 billion in senior lien notes. Now, that included first lien debt, which is usually the safest kind because they're first in line to get paid if things go south.
Gotcha.
And they also had 1.5 lien debt. That ranks just a little bit behind the first lien debt in terms of, you know, who gets paid back first.
Yeah.
And then below all of that, they had another $250 million in second lien notes. And then even further down the line, you had these subordinated notes. They're kind of like the last ones to get anything if there's anything left.
Right. So it's like a whole pecking order of who gets paid first.
Exactly. A whole hierarchy. And this kind of multi-layered debt structure is pretty common. You know, when you're talking about companies that have taken on a lot of debt.
So they've got this huge debt, this complex structure of who owes what to whom. What was Momentive's big plan to deal with this whole mess when they filed for Chapter 11? What were they proposing in their reorganization plan?
Okay, so their plan basically involved giving out new notes to the senior creditors to replace the old ones. But, and this is a big but, the terms of these new notes, well, let's just say they weren't exactly a hit with everyone involved.
I bet.
Now, the second lien note holders, they were supposed to get equity in the reorganized company, you know, a piece of the pie. But the subordinated note holders, the folks at the bottom of the pile, they were looking at getting absolutely nothing under the proposed plan.
Ouch. Yeah, that's got to hurt.
Yeah, it really shows you how the whole bankruptcy game works. Who gets priority? Who gets left holding the bag?
So it sounds like the senior creditors weren't exactly thrilled with this plan. What were their main gripes? What were they arguing about?
Oh, they had some major issues with the whole thing. Two big ones, actually. First off, they were claiming that they were owed a massive $200 million make-whole premium. Now, this make-whole premium, it's basically a fee that borrowers usually pay when they pay back their debt earlier than they were supposed to.
Yeah.
Like if they refinance or something and decide to pay off the old debt early, they got to compensate the lender for all the interest payments they would have gotten if the debt had just run its course.
Makes sense.
So they were arguing that since the whole bankruptcy process basically forced an early payoff, that triggered this make-whole premium clause, and they were entitled to that $200 million.
Right. Like they got shortchanged because of the bankruptcy. And then their second big issue was with the interest rate.
Exactly. Their second big gripe was about the interest rate being offered on those new replacement notes.
Mm.
They were arguing that the rate was way too low. You know, like it wasn't enough to make up for the risk they were taking by essentially being forced to lend more money to a company that just went bankrupt. They said it violated the bankruptcy code's cram down provision. That provision is all about making sure that creditors who don't agree to a plan still get treated fairly.
Okay, so this whole make-whole premium thing is where it starts to get really interesting. So why did the senior creditors think they deserved that $200 million? And why did the court ultimately come back and say, nope, sorry, you're not getting it?
Okay, so the senior lien holders, they were basing their argument on the specific wording that was in their indenture agreement. That's the contract that spells out all the terms of the debt.
Like the fine print, right?
Yeah. Exactly. Like the nitty-gritty details. And these agreements, they usually have clauses that lay out exactly when you got to pay a make-whole premium. And typically, it's when the borrower decides, on their own, to pay back the debt early, before it's actually due. like we talked about with refinancing.
They're doing it voluntarily, right? Not because they're forced to.
Exactly. It's all about choice.
And the court really honed in on that word voluntary, didn't they?
Absolutely. The whole crux of the court's reasoning was that momentive filing for bankruptcy, well, that triggered what they call an automatic acceleration of the debt.
Okay, now I'm lost. What's automatic acceleration?
So basically, this acceleration thing, it's a legal mechanism that kicks in and says, hey, because of this bankruptcy, all of the outstanding debt is due right this second. It's like hitting the fast forward button on the whole debt repayment schedule.
Wow.
And the court said, hold on. There's a big difference between a company choosing to pay off its debt early because it wants to and having that debt become due all at once because it's forced to file for bankruptcy.
Right. One is a choice and the other is like, well, not much of a choice at all.
Precisely. And in the court's eyes, because that maturity date got moved up, accelerated because of the bankruptcy, they said it wasn't an early redemption in the way that the make-whole premium clause was talking about.
So no premium.
No premium.
Yeah.
The court even laid it out pretty bluntly, saying the notes weren't redeemed early. They were paid post-maturity after acceleration. No premium owed.
Mic drop.
It's a pretty big deal because it shows how crucial those little details, those words in a contract, can be.
Yeah.
And bankruptcy, well, it can throw a real wrench in how those words get interpreted.
Absolutely. It's a huge lesson for anyone who's drafting these debt agreements or even just trying to figure out what they mean. You know, that tiny difference between a voluntary prepayment and an automatic acceleration because of bankruptcy, well, it can mean a difference of $200 million.
Yeah, no kidding. It's a big deal.
All right, let's shift gears a bit and talk about the big interest rate debate. You mentioned that this caused some real division in the legal world. What was the core of that disagreement?
So this part of the case, it really gets at a crucial and often debated point in bankruptcy law. How do you determine a fair interest rate for debt that's basically being forced on creditors who don't agree to a plan, what they call cram down?
Right.
The bankruptcy court, they initially took what you could call a formula-based approach, you know, often using this thing called the Till decision from the Supreme Court as their guide.
Okay.
And what that usually means is that they start with a pretty low risk-free interest rate, you know, something that's considered pretty safe. And then they tack on a little bit extra risk premium to account for how shaky the debtor's finances are and how long the term of the new debt is. In Momentive's case, the bankruptcy court only added a 1.5% risk premium.
Seems kind of low for a company going through bankruptcy, doesn't it? And is that what the Second Circuit basically said? Hold on, not so fast.
Yeah, exactly. The Second Circuit wasn't on board with that. They said, hold up, we got to look at the real world, at the actual market where this kind of debt is being traded. They came up with this two-step test. First, the bankruptcy court has to figure out if there's even a real market for similar replacement notes, you know, ones that carry similar risks.
Like, is there a place where this kind of debt is actively being bought and sold?
Exactly. It's just like figuring out the value of any other asset. The best way to know what it's worth is to see what similar assets are going for out in the marketplace.
Makes sense. So if there's a real market for this type of debt, then that market rate should be the one they use.
Exactly. The Second Circuit's thinking was that if you've got a market that's reliable and where things are actually being traded, well, the interest rates that are happening there, that's the best way to tell what kind of risk premium lenders are demanding for that type of loan. It's a lot more objective and grounded in reality than just plugging numbers into a formula, you know, which might not capture all the specifics of that particular debtor and what the overall economic climate is like for companies that are in financial trouble.
Right.
And they said that only if a court can't find a real market for this kind of debt, then they should fall back on using a formula like the one they talked about in that Till case.
So they're basically saying, let's use real-world data whenever we can. It sounds like this was a pretty big win for creditors. Does it give them more ammo to argue for higher interest rates when companies restructure in bankruptcy?
I'd say so. It definitely tips the scales a bit. You see, using that Till formula, while it was supposed to provide some kind of baseline, it sometimes resulted in these really low interest rates that creditors felt weren't even close to making up for the risk they were taking by lending to a company that had just gone bankrupt. So what the Second Circuit did, it gives those creditors a stronger argument.
So they can say, hey, the market is demanding this much for this type of loan, so that's what we should get. But doesn't that make it harder for companies to actually pull off a successful reorganization? You know, if those market interest rates are super high, that new debt might just be too much to handle.
That's true. There's definitely a balance to strike. It could make things a lot harder for companies struggling to get back on their feet.
It's a tough situation all around. Okay, let's dig into the fight between the second lien and subordinated note holders. It sounds like the second lien folks came out on top. What was the main point of contention there?
This all boiled down to how they define senior indebtedness in the subordinated notes agreement. Usually, in agreements for a subordinated debt, they spell out that certain other debts rank higher, or senior to them. And those senior debts have to be paid in full before those subordinated debt holders see a dime.
Makes sense.
But the problem here was that the court found the definition of senior indebtedness in Momentive's subordinated notes agreement. Well, it was kind of fuzzy. It wasn't totally clear whether the second lien notes were supposed to be included in that definition of debt that had to be paid back before the subordinated notes got anything.
Oh man, ambiguity in legal documents. That's got to be a lawyer's worst nightmare, right? So how did the court deal with that lack of clarity?
Well, because the words in the agreement itself weren't super clear, the court had to look beyond the actual document and consider what we call extrinsic evidence. That means things like what was said during negotiations, emails that were sent back and forth, early drafts of the agreement, and even what's considered normal practice in the world of leveraged finance when you're talking about different levels of debt.
So they were playing detective, piecing together the intents, right?
And what did they find when they did all that digging? Well, the evidence was pretty overwhelming. It showed that everyone involved, both Momentive and the different lenders, they all understood and intended for the second lien notes to be treated as senior to the subordinated notes. It's like they all had this unspoken agreement, even though it wasn't perfectly captured in the wording of the subordinated notes agreement.
So even though the drafting wasn't perfect, the court figured out what they were really trying to do.
Exactly. They said the intention was clear. The second lien holders were supposed to be paid before the subordinated holders got a cent.
So the big takeaway here for anyone dealing with debt agreements, what's the lesson?
It's simple. Really, when you're drafting these agreements, you got to be clear. Precision is key. You have to spell things out in a way that leaves no room for doubt. And this whole situation shows how a little bit of fuzziness, a lack of clarity in defining something as basic as senior indebtedness can lead to these massive legal battles that cost a ton of time and money when a company goes bankrupt.
Right. It's all about dotting your I's and crossing your T's.
Exactly. Spending the time and effort up front to get those details right can save everyone a world of hurt later on.
Absolutely. So we've talked about the make-whole premium puzzle, the interest rate debate, and the whole issue of debt priority. Now let's bring it all back to you, our listener. Why should you care about what went down in this Momentive case?
This case is a gold mine of insights, especially when it comes to complex financial deals and bankruptcy law.
It's like a case study, right?
Yeah, exactly. The Second Circuit's decision on the make-whole premium, it actually created a conflict with another decision, the energy futures case, that was decided by the Third Circuit.
Oh, interesting. So different courts are saying different things.
Right, which just goes to show how much uncertainty there is in this area of the law.
Okay.
Whether you can actually enforce a make-whole premium in bankruptcy, it can really depend on where you are in the country, which court you're dealing with, and the exact language of the debt agreement itself.
Makes sense.
And with this difference of opinion between courts, it's possible that the Supreme Court might have to step in at some point to settle the score.
Wow, so it could go all the way to the top. That's pretty significant.
Yeah, it is. It just goes to show you that this stuff is really important. And for people working in this field, all this legal back and forth makes it tough to plan and assess risk.
It's like trying to hit a moving target.
Yeah, kinda. Now, there's another interesting wrinkle in this case. Even though Momentive had already put its reorganization plan into action, you know, they'd issued the new debt and were moving forward, the Second Circuit still decided to hear the appeals. They could have just said, it's too late, the plan is already in motion, but they didn't.
So they were really committed to getting this right, huh?
Yeah, they were. They could have used this thing called equitable mootness to dismiss the appeals. That basically means that if too much has already happened based on the plan, and undoing it would cause a huge mess, the court might just say, look, it's too late to change anything now.
So they were basically saying that the legal questions here were just too important to ignore, even if it meant potentially messing with a plan that was already underway.
That's exactly right. They were particularly interested in the whole interest rate methodology issue. They wanted to provide clear guidance on that, even if it meant shaking things up a bit.
So it shows they're willing to stick up for creditors who are fighting for their rights, even if the bankruptcy process is pretty far along.
Exactly. And for you, as someone who's clearly interested in this stuff, I think the key takeaway is this. When you're looking at financial documents, those little details, the exact wording, it all matters. A lot. And the rules for figuring out fair interest rates in bankruptcy, well, those are still being debated and they could change, so you got to stay on top of that.
Right.
And finally, you got to understand the whole hierarchy of who gets paid back first when a company goes belly up. And those priorities, those have to be spelled out clearly with no room for confusion in any financial deal you're involved in.
So what's the big picture here? What can we learn from this whole momentum saga?
It shows you that when a company goes bankrupt, the stakes are incredibly high. And those tiny details in legal agreements, those can have a massive impact. We're talking millions of dollars.
No kidding.
It also shows that there's this constant push and pull between those established formulas that lawyers use and what's actually happening in the real world of finance, where things are always changing.
Absolutely.
And here's a thought for you to chew on, something to think about as you keep learning about this fascinating world where law and finance collide. We've got this disagreement between courts about whether make-whole premiums are enforceable in bankruptcy, right? So how do you think those lending agreements are going to be written in the future? How are they going to handle these premiums if a company files for bankruptcy? And what kind of unexpected consequences might come from those changes?
Great question. Lots to think about there.
It's a complex issue, but a really important one.
That's for sure. Well, this has been a fascinating deep dive into a really important case. Thanks for breaking it all down for us.
My pleasure. It's been great chatting about this.
Always a pleasure.
Until next time.
Until next time.